Good morning. It's Monday, July 13th, 2026, and this is Pip Install, your daily download on power, security, and the machines. Two shockwaves hit over the weekend, and they're wired together. Out at sea, the Strait of Hormuz, the choke point one of every five barrels of oil passes through, became a shooting gallery. Iran attacked a container ship, declared the strait closed, and the United States answered with its heaviest strikes in months. And in Washington, Senator Lindsey Graham, for two decades the loudest voice in that city demanding a harder line on Iran, died Saturday night. The war he spent a career calling for came roaring back the same weekend he did. Then, China and Russia finish their war games, a typhoon empties Chinese coastlines, the Pentagon runs out of cash, the Justice Department shows up at reporters' front doors and, I promise it's real, a silent something over a nuclear weapons plant. Let's install today's update. Start at the water, because this is where the weekend turned. For weeks, the US-Iran war had been sitting in an ugly holding pattern, a ceasefire on paper nobody was really keeping. Saturday night, the paper burned. US Central Command says Iran's Revolutionary Guard blatantly attacked the GFS Galaxy, a Cyprus-flagged container ship crossing the Strait of Hormuz, leaving it on fire with engine damage and one civilian crew member missing. Tehran called it a warning shot at a ship off its approved route. Then the guard declared the entire strait closed until further notice. Washington's answer came fast. Roughly 140 targets struck across Iran, part of more than 300 in a week. Freya, is the strait actually shut?
That is the fight underneath the fight. Iran says closed. Central Command flatly disputes it. Iran does not control the strait. Traffic is flowing, and US forces are positioned and prepared to keep it open. The truth sits in between, and it's almost worse than a clean closure. The strait isn't sealed, it's poisoned. Tanker traffic has fallen to roughly a third of normal, about 30 ships a day, where there were nearly 100. Because no captain wants to be the next GFS Galaxy. Iran doesn't need to sink the fleet. It just needs the world to believe the water is unsafe and charge for safe passage. And the bruise lands on the neighbours. Over the weekend, Gulf states, Qatar, Kuwait, the UAE, Oman, were intercepting incoming fire and sounding sirens. Iran claims strikes reaching as far as Jordan, though Washington hasn't confirmed that one. These are not combatants. They simply have the misfortune of geography.
And the president made his own read of the diplomacy plain. Here he was last week.
As far as I'm concerned, it's just a waste of time dealing with them. They're liars.
Stack, the strategy behind that, if there is one, and the money.
There is one, and it's a contradiction held together by will. President Trump declared the ceasefire over, set Iran a Saturday deadline to renounce the attacks and reopen the strait. And when Iran answered by hitting a ship instead, the US struck. Yet the same administration kept a negotiating team in Oman all weekend. Vice President Vance, Secretary Rubio, and the envoys talking through Omani mediators to Iran's foreign minister about safe passage. The whole war now turns on a single ambiguity. The memorandum both sides signed in June never actually defined who controls the shipping lanes. That blank line is what they're shooting over. On the money, mind the framing, because this is where people panic wrongly. Brent crude closed near $75 Friday, up on the week, carrying a fat risk premium, but not a spike. The frightening numbers, 100, 130, even the words 200 a barrel, are forecasts if the disruption holds for weeks, not today's price. Watch the Monday open. If tankers keep away and Brent breaks 100, this stops being foreign policy and becomes your grocery bill.
Bash, the human floor under all of it.
Yeah, because a missing crew member off the GFS Galaxy has a name somebody is waiting on tonight, and we don't know it yet. And inside Iran, The regime is doing what this regime always does, asserting strength while hiding. The new supreme leader, Mujtaba Khamenei, put out his first message since taking over, a written vow of vengeance. Quote, "This vengeance is the will of our nation and must inevitably be carried out." Written, because he still hasn't appeared in public, skipped his own predecessor's funeral, reportedly hurt in the strike that started all this. So a man nobody has seen promises revenge nobody voted for, and the bill goes to the trucker in Karachi who can't afford diesel, the sailor on a Cyprus-flagged box ship, the Iranian kid whose theocracy picked this fight and will let him pay for it. The strait will reopen eventually. It always does. The people it costs are never the ones who closed it.
Watch the tanker count and the Monday oil print. Those two numbers tell you whether this week gets cheaper or much more expensive. And that brings us hard to Washington. Because the man who spent longer than almost anyone demanding this fight didn't live to see this chapter of it. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina died Saturday night after a cardiac arrest at his home. He was 71. Stack, take the measure of him.
23 years in the Senate, armed services, judiciary, a fixture on every Sunday show, and, on foreign policy, the most relentless hawk in the building. If there was a hard line to take on Iran, on Russia, on intervention, Graham was usually three steps past it and waving the rest along. His arc was its own American story. In 2016, he called Donald Trump, his words, a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot, and then became one of the president's closest allies in the chamber. He'd just won his primary for a fifth term. The president's tribute, posted Saturday, "Senator Lindsey Graham, one of the greatest people and senators I have ever known, is dead. He was always working and was a true American patriot."
And here is why it matters beyond the eulogy. Graham dies at the exact moment the Iran war he championed reignites, removing the Senate's loudest pro-escalation voice from the room during the escalation. His seat now falls to South Carolina's Republican governor to fill by appointment, and it turns a safe race into a live one for November. One era's certainties leave the stage precisely when the next crisis needs deciding. That is the through line of this entire broadcast.
However you felt about his politics, and people felt strongly both ways, a career that long ending mid-crisis leaves a real hole in how Washington argues about war. Turn east, quickly. While the Gulf burned, two other militaries spent the week rehearsing, and a storm emptied the coastline they were rehearsing off of. Freya.
China and Russia wrap their annual joint naval exercise, Joint Sea 2026, off Qingdao today. As ever, the photograph is the point. Two authoritarian navies telling Washington, we are not alone. Layered on top, Typhoon Barvi tore across the region this weekend. Landfall in eastern China, more than 1.5 million people evacuated, at least 17 dead in the Philippines, thousands displaced in Taiwan. A reminder that the Pacific's biggest near-term disruptions are still made of wind and water, not missiles.
Though the missiles are getting attention too. A US Air Force think tank flagged new satellite imagery of mass salvo missile launches at a desert site in Inner Mongolia, built to overwhelm Taiwan's defences. And China's own military press spent late June arguing the next war will be won by algorithms. And yet, carry this into any conversation this week, Washington's own intelligence community assessed that Beijing has no fixed timeline to take Taiwan and is not committed to the famous 2027 invasion window. Chinese leaders still prefer to win Taiwan without firing a shot, because they know an amphibious invasion is one of the hardest operations in warfare, with a high chance of humiliating failure. Hold both. China is building the tools for a war it has not decided to fight. The build-up is real. The countdown is not.
capability is not intention, and mistaking one for the other is how you talk yourself into the wrong war. Now our beat, the money and the machines, and it comes with a press freedom sting in the tail. Heap, three threads, one knot.
And what a knot. Thread one, the Pentagon is broke. A department with a nearly $1 trillion budget is burning cash faster than Congress can replace it. Because bombing Iran 140 targets at a time is not a coupon deal. Officials are asking for more than $67 billion in emergency funding, and Congress is dragging its feet. In part, because it's furious it's being handed the invoice for a war it feels it's learning about after the strikes. Thread 2. And it's a beautiful reversal. For 3 years, America choked off China's access to advanced AI chips. Worked well enough that Nvidia's share of the Chinese market reportedly fell from over 90% to about half. Now Beijing is playing the same card backward, reportedly summoning Alibaba, ByteDance, and the lab Jipu to discuss restricting overseas access to China's best AI models, including the open weight ones. China spent years preaching that models should be free, right up until its own got good enough to hoard.
And thread three, the front door.
Thread three ties the bow. Remember that war the Pentagon can't afford and Congress feels lied to about? On Friday, the Justice Department subpoenaed four New York Times reporters. Some served at their homes, over their reporting that Trump flew home from the NATO summit on the old Air Force One because the Secret Service had security concerns about the Qatar-gifted jet. A leak investigation, grand jury testimony demanded this week. The Times lawyer said, quote, "The appearance of federal law enforcement agents on the doorstep of news reporters should shock the conscience of any American who believes in the Constitution and the press freedom it protects." So, a war we can't fund, a Congress kept in the dark, and federal agents on reporters' porches over a story about the president's plane. The machine you should watch this week isn't only the one over Iran. It's the one pointed at the people trying to tell you about it.
When Beijing starts guarding its AI like its missiles, and Washington starts subpoenaing the press over a jet, you're watching two governments decide that information itself is the contested territory. That's the story under the story. A quick stop in Ukraine, where the war doesn't lead broadcasts anymore, but hasn't paused for a second. Bash.
Friday night, Russia threw a dozen missiles and over 120 drones at Ukraine. Ukraine's defenders knocked down most of the drones and none of the ballistic missiles. Glide bombs on Sumy killed 5 people and wounded around 30. Over the last month, Russia clawed another 31 square kilometers around the Donbass fortress towns. Nothing on a map, everything if it's your street. Ukraine hit back the way it can now. A long-range drone strike deep in Siberia on Russia's largest refinery, 1,700 miles from the front. And NATO's follow-through from the Ankara summit is finally moving. Kyiv's getting a license to produce Patriot missiles, which is the only real answer to a barrage you can't intercept. 2 years ago, that all leaves the show. This weekend, it's a segment between an oil crisis and a UFO story. Not because it stopped mattering, because we got used to it. I don't think we should.
And finally, you earned it. Look up. Heap, the truth is apparently out there, and the Pentagon just posted it.
They did! Friday, the Pentagon dropped its fourth batch of UFO files, 40 new records going back to 1948, pulled from the CIA, FBI, NASA, even the Energy Department, released under an executive order requiring the government to actually cough these up. Most of it is the usual grainy blobs and, are you seeing this, cockpit chatter over the Atlantic and the Yellow Sea. But one stops the giggling. In 2015, a silent object, no sound, no visible propulsion, hovered over the Pantex plant near Amarillo, Texas. Pantex is where America assembles and disassembles its nuclear weapons. Guards put the whole facility on lockdown and chased the thing with binoculars. It just sat there. So look, I love a little green men segment as much as anyone. But whether that's aliens or a very good drone, unidentified craft loiters over the nuke plant and nobody can explain it 11 years later is the part I'd like someone with a badge to keep working on.
Agreed. Keep looking up and keep asking who's flying it. That's your install for Monday, July 13th. Watch the straight, watch the barrel, and watch who Washington decides to point its machines at next. The analysis is Anna Dudley's. I just handed you the update. I'm Pip. Package install success. We'll see you on the next install. Thank you.